Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch, as you always are now on Tuesdays, 12 noon here, Pacific Standard Time, in beautiful Los Angeles. I thank you so much for joining us today, everybody. I have one of my favorite guests on the air today, so I'm really excited. And I'm going to talk as briefly about the intro as I can, because if I really kind of discussed all of his accolades with you, we would take up the first 20 minutes of the show. So I'm going to make this speedy, but just let you know who you're dealing with today. And you've seen him before or heard him before here on the couch. Leonard Felder, PhD. I call him Dr. Felder. He's a licensed psychologist in West LA. He has written 13 books on Jewish spirituality and personal growth that have sold over 1 million copies and were translated into 14 languages. He's been invited nationwide to do so many things, leading discussions on the connection between Jewish texts and daily psychological dilemmas that we all share, and you're going to really resonate with what we're talking about today. He's also appeared on over 200 radio and television shows, including Oprah, The Today Show, CNN, the CBS Early Show, NBC Nightly News, National Public Radio, Canada's, and in London, just to name a few. So, you know, I can go on. And of course, Dr. Felder is active in several volunteer organizations. He received the Distinguished Merit Citation of the National Conference of Community and Justice for developing innovative programs to combat racism, sexism, homophobia, and religious prejudice. And he has so many books out. Like I said, 13. Now we're talking about his latest book. It's called We See It So Differently: Spiritual Ways to Make Peace When Family Members or Colleagues Disagree About Religion, Politics, and Other Issues. And I'm going to let him share more about the book and why he wrote it. But he is exploring, obviously, by the title, how to respond to the political and religious disagreements that are currently causing a lot of painful moments for family and co-worker get-togethers and friends. Also congregational meetings. I mean, it's really difficult right now because even though Joe Biden is the president-elect, we're still having a lot of rallies going on here, protesting that in West Los Angeles. So it's fascinating around the country to see what's going on. But, you know, there's a lot of discussions we're going to have during the holidays, and we want to keep things pretty mellow. So Dr. Felder has written so many wonderful tools, highly effective ways to keep the peace, right, Dr. Felder, to try and keep the peace in the family and with the coworkers as we move along this year. So we're going to start it off by asking, of course, it's sort of a rhetorical question, but what was it that inspired you to write the book?
Finally, all this is going to be, but, you know, I noticed for the last several years, there were families where people were blowing up because something was going on at their Thanksgiving or their Christmas or their Hanukkah or their Kwanzaa or Passover or Easter. Yeah. And I saw that there were so many families where they were in pain. They were in pain because somebody felt left out. Somebody felt put down. Somebody felt like, how are we going to deal with this person who keeps exploding the family? Mm-hmm. And I saw some of this in my own extended family. I saw it with some of my wife's friends. We're longtime friends. And we're starting to figure out, can we still be friends even though we see things so differently? Sure. And I flash back on when I was 14. My mom died when I was 14. She had cancer when I was 10, and she died when I was 14.
Thank you.
The night after she died, the whole family had gotten together, and this was in Detroit, and they invited everybody in from listening to the Detroit Tigers baseball game, and they were going to have this religious service, and there was a lot of fighting about how we're going to do the service.
It's right.
Going to be traditional, progressive, or open, not open. So it was a mess. And I was a sassy 14-year-old, and I confronted my grandfather in public in front of his people and said, you know, this is not what my mom would want. And I was a real, you know, in-your-face kind of person. And there were some things that were correct about what I was saying. And there was something where I was missing the boat. The boat was my grandfather had just lost his daughter.
This
was his home, and these were his peeps, and I was embarrassing him. So I learned from that, and I, you know, I've studied in Judaism and Christianity and Muslim and Hindu and Buddhist. There's so many beautiful spiritual teachings about how to disagree without being disagreeable, how to respect this person's soul, while at the same time you're very clear about cleaning up some of the disagreements you have with them. And it's not about keeping my shut time, which is, it doesn't come naturally, and we didn't learn this in high school or college. You have to learn somewhere how to do this so that I don't lose the civility in my family, or I don't like cause civil wars in my family.
That's beautiful. And so I think, you know, I was going to ask you the common question, who do you believe will benefit from this book? I would say just about everyone. Everyone.
Well, I think it's anybody who can admit that we don't have all the answers right away on how to talk to so-and-so whose ideas make your skin crawl. If there's someone in your family that you just say, oh, God, here we go again.
Yes.
Here we go again with the politics or the religion or the whatever conversation always gets the two of you, you know, really tense, really edgy. You can't digest your food. You can't. And, and a lot of times people lose it, even really enlightened, well-educated spiritual people lose it on each other. And how to not lose it with someone, anybody who wants help on how to not lose it with your loved ones or even with the person that you live with, it's crucial that we have at least some conversations about how to do that, because there are ways to do that. And spiritual traditions have been wrestling with this for years. How do we disagree without going off on each other?
And really, this book is so helpful, everyone. You've got to get this, and we're going to be telling you how you can pick up the book. Of course, you can find it on Amazon as well. And also how you can find out more about Dr. Leonard Felder and check out all of his books, by the way, which are amazing. And some of my favorites, I just want to throw this in here, all right, because I want folks to know who you are. 7 Prayers That Can Change Your Life. We talk about this every week, folks, the prayers that can change your life, the 10 challenges. One of my favorites, Thing In is a great, making peace with your parents, all these wonderful, this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of some of the most helpful books that Dr. Felder has written. So we'll tell you more about how you can pick those up as well, along with his latest book, which is We See It So Differently, Spiritual Ways to Make Peace When Family Members or Colleagues Disagree About Religion, Politics, and Other Issues. And we're talking about some of those other issues as well. So I love in the book, you share your favorite theory as to why, you know, we have so much trouble exchanging ideas with each other. What's the deal here? So can you talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Smart people, good people, people with compassion and heart are getting told different stories. And, you know, a lot of people already know this, but think about it for a minute. So I watch a certain TV network, and I get worked up. I have trouble sleeping because Rachel Maddow gets me really worked up about something that I really can't figure out. And Rachel tells me something about it, and I'm worked up about it. And we have this person who comes once in a while to our house. She's an organizer person. My wife and I are not that great at organizing. She helps us with files and filing systems. She's a wonderful, compassionate, good person. She's been loving to my special needs kid. She's been family for many years, and she lives in Orange County, and she's a Republican. And so she comes to our house, and we're both watching the same story. And for instance, that, you know, I think they're putting people in cages and separating them from their mothers. And I'm horrified by that. I'm the child of a Holocaust survivor where our family was turned away at Cuba and Florida. on the boat, the St. Louis. It became the movie, The Voyage of the Dam. And they were sent back. And I'm named after my grandfather, who was this close to coming to America, wound up being sent back to Europe and died in Auschwitz. So this is personal, you know. So I'm freaking out about these people being put in cages and separated from their mother. She is watching the same clip on TV, and she says to me, "Boy, am I glad that they're getting all these gang members." And I said, "What gang members?" I said, "I just see my kid." She said, "Oh, no. She said, "These are gang members. They're rapists. I mean, I've seen interviews with the people who were raped." I said, "What interviews?" So she's watching a different network. She's watching Fox News, and they're covering gang members who rape people, and they get either one or two or three stories, and the stories grip this nice person's heart. So instead of hating this person, I start to say, you know, let's explore together. We're both being told different sides of this story. Let's find out what's true about yours. Let's find out what's true about mine. Let's get back to each other next week. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out what we're both missing from the story, because we're both smart, compassionate people. And we have completely different stories we're being told. So instead of killing each other or hating each other or shutting off from each other, even though it does rip my intestines a little bit to even be in this conversation. I'm not saying that I'm neutral or neutered on this subject. I'm just saying it's so important that I see the soul and the dignity of this person who is being told a completely different version of the event.
Brilliantly said. I mean, and it is so true. And everybody will have their own take, and whatever they embrace is their truth. And we have to respect that in some way. We don't have to necessarily agree with it at all, but understand, I don't know exactly what kind of information they're vibing to or being fed. Also from their family members, and also from, you know, there's a lot of tribes. This is the way we have to think, right?
If you're a spiritual person and you want to always constantly be growing and learning, I have to learn at that moment that I've got this real self-righteous streak, which flared up when I was 14. My grandfather could flare up with this nice person who comes to our house, who's very nice to my kid. You know, so I have to watch out for my own self-righteousness. I have to work on that. Otherwise, I'm a perpetrator of disrespect. And on the other hand, I also know that sometimes I don't have the whole story. I mean, I know what NBC News has given me so that they can make a profit. And I know what Fox News is giving her so that they can make a profit. They're able to deliver to advertisers because they've got me by the short hairs, you know, just set every day. Yeah. And I'm gullible to that. And I'm not quite able. Maybe I could form a 12-step group and try to break this addiction. But I'm not able to turn off the news because I care, because I'm very involved in being an activist and trying to heal the world, and trying to heal the world. I'm not one of those people whose recommendation is, oh, turn off the news and just shut out the world. Right. For some people, that is an appropriate thing. If your cardiologist tells you to do that, go for it. But I was very active in this last election. I was very active in groups that tried to help people get out to vote. I was very active in making sure people got accurate information. I'm going to continue to be an activist.
Yes.
But try to do it in a way that doesn't demonize others and doesn't create more false narratives.
Boy, I wish we had more folks like you. But listeners, viewers out there, you can learn how to take some of these tips, understanding the tools you can use in order to have more peaceful holidays, which we're going to be talking about as well coming up. As we look at Thanksgiving and Hanukkah and Christmas and Kwanzaa or whatever holiday, and of course, coming into the new year. So maybe we can think differently, read this book as we approach a new, fresh year. Universal consciousness, it's changing, folks. I always talk about that. Finally, we have some change going on. So, you know, there's a really wonderful approach you talk about. It's the Jewish approach to take an account. How can we utilize those tools? Can you describe, taking an accounting of our soul, and especially when it comes to sitting down with family at the holidays and trying to discuss red versus blue politics? How are we going to use that?
So even though these approaches come from Jewish teachings, they're very similar to teachings in other traditions, and whether you're Buddhist or Muslim or Hindu or Christian, or whether you're totally allergic to religion at all. My sister's totally allergic to religion, spirituality. She's a good person. So I always write my books saying, how do I write this in a way that my sister won't vomit? You know, how will I
Right.
That I don't lose her because she hates any preachiness. She hates anything that's self-righteous. And, you know, so she's a really good person for me to do one because I love her. And I you know, I'm imagining I'm having lunch with her when I'm writing the book. What would cause my sister not to roll her eyes and go, oh, there he goes again.
Yeah.
So the principles are very simply that you're trying to take an accounting of your soul, either once a day or once a week or once a year. And you're trying to find out, where am I out of balance?
Okay.
So if you're out of balance and you're always sure you're right, you know, wake up to that. You're not right all the time. You've got a piece of the puzzle. You've got a piece of the jigsaw puzzle. And you need other people to be your fellow teachers. In Jewish teachings and in many spiritual teachings, the person that you argue with constantly is called your hevruta, your friend, your partner. So when people are wrestling about, well, how do we interpret this and how do we interpret that and how do we interpret the teachings in the Torah or the Bible about LGBT issues, when you're wrestling with someone about those issues, you wrestle, you bring in sources, you bring in points of view, and then you go to lunch with each other and you go for a walk with each other and you put your arm around each other and you say, that was a good conversation. I learned a whole bunch of stuff I didn't know before. I saw it from a different point of view than I know before. That's why we have other human beings on this planet, so that we don't spend the whole time in a mirror,
that's
in an echo chamber, just hearing our own point of view. That's very boring and it's limiting.
Yes, it really is.
No. So frequently, you know, I need to know in a conversation with someone who disagrees with me, tell me why you feel that way, because I need to know. Just one more quick example. So I'm a person who sometimes, if someone comes to me and they want help or they want money or whatever, I'm a person who probably is going to say yes. I'm what the people call it, a bleeding heart. Okay, I'm a bleeding heart. So I need people in my life sometimes who will say, is there a better way of doing that particular helping someone? Is there a way to empower them without just giving or taking over or disempowering them by being too forthcoming? Is there a way to slow down and try to boost them up? Is there a way to bring it up in a way that is within a budget or limitations? Sometimes I need a tight rear-ended person to be able to say, there's other ways to do it than just writing the check or responding immediately. Sometimes you have to think about, is there a better way to do that? So sometimes the other political party is better at that than my political party at saying, there's got to be a budget. There's got to be a way to pay for it. There's got to be a way to do it in a sequence. And there's got to be a way to do it that doesn't disempower people. I say, okay, I'll listen to those ideas. I'm not going to immediately do all those ideas,
right,
but I'm at least trying to find a middle ground based on their, you know, their cautiousness about letting too much out, and mine, I'm flowing a little too much. So I'm out of balance. I need to take an accounting of my soul to say, don't keep doing that thing that might disempower people. As a parent, I have to know, when am I being too generous and kind to my kid and it disempowers them? And when do I have to like empower them by slowing down and letting them, you know, rise up and find their own strength?
Oh, that's beautifully said. Thank you for that. You know, in on that note as well, trying to keep the peace and keep things. You also in your talk about, you know, during the holidays and just in general after the election and so many of the other issues we'll be talking about, which includes differences, you know, about LGBT, also the Me Too movement and chats about Israel, things like that. We'll be talking about that a little bit too, but. When it comes to email, when it comes to texting, things can get pretty weird as well. So what are some of the ideas that you can share with people in order to keep the peace on that level?
Well, one thing is you can control your own behavior. You can't control what people are saying to you, but you can control how you are. And if you say, if that's something I'm willing to have everybody see, including people who are going to be hurt by it, then send it. But if it's something that's going to hurt somebody that you don't want to hurt, or if it's something that's not necessarily factual and you haven't snopes it out yet, you haven't found out, is that really true? Yes, do I be a person that's going to cause people, because you can't pull it back once you've sent it. So texting in your emails becomes a great way to say, am I using my mouth, this gift that you know, the enormous creative presence has given all of us, we've given us intelligence, this mysterious source has given us the ability to speak, to think things through. Am I using that in a way that's hurting people and it's not even accurate? Or am I using it in a way that continues to boost up and to build up rather than tear down?
Oh, beautifully said. Exactly. Yeah, I just love it.
And I don't claim to be perfect. I sometimes, you know, I sometimes flare and say something and realize, whoa, that one needed a rewrite. That one needed an edit. And so, you know, in Judaism, the word sin means to miss the mark. It's like an archery metaphor.
Yes.
So I need to aim better next time. I have to say, next time, do a little bit better on the editing. Do a little bit better on the breathing and the mindfulness, because you didn't do a good job yesterday, but today's a new day. So that doesn't make me a sinner. It makes me somebody who's constantly growing. And I hope that people know that we're always needing to constantly grow. And sometimes when you do miss, that's the moment to really listen to the person who says, wow, that made me uncomfortable. And I go, oh, teach me why that made you uncomfortable. Because I don't want to be someone who just makes people uncomfortable. I want to be somebody who builds coalitions and builds bridges.
Yes, you do. And you are famous for that. I mean, you have done so much and given so much. And your 13 books are all amazing. And everything that you've done, excuse me, in terms of charity and helping others. And of course, your practice is just amazing. We're close together, proximity in our offices, which is so cool. Every time I refer you to people, you're just so busy. No, I'm kidding. That's because you're amazing and people love you. And we can only do so much for all. But this book, by the way, will do a lot for you when it comes to just trying to keep things cool with family members, coworkers, friends, and trying to, when it comes to difficult discussions, how to mediate those discussions, how to be mindful. And I think Dr. Felder said it right, mindfulness, you know, and have respect for each other. And, you know, the book is called We See It So Differently, Spiritual Ways to Make Peace When Family Members or Colleagues Disagree About Religious or Religion, Politics, and Other Issues. We're going to be talking about some of those other issues, of course, particularly the Me Too movement. You have a wonderful chapter on that. And how we can mediate some of those things going on. For years, Weinstein, for years, it's been this, the casting couch, the sexual comments in every company workplace, colleagues, friends. I mean, they're usually, you know, are inappropriate things that are said. A lot of people have sort of just allowed that to happen. Whether it be a man or a woman who's talking about inappropriate things with someone, it happens in every workplace, in every situation. So how do we sort of make peace with that? How do we discuss that with someone and handle these uncomfortable situations? And maybe you could describe a little bit more about the Me Too movement.
Okay. Well, the question I always ask people to ask themselves is, what kind of a world do I want to live in, and how do I want my daughter to be treated? How do I want my wife to be treated? How do I want to be treated? So, you know, there's lots of different situations that we run into who are not as big as the Harvey Weinsteins or whatever. You know, yep. and they're subtle, and they happen with people that we're involved with. You know, so it might be your boss, it might be your partner in business, you might be a colleague, it might be somebody that you're, you know, in an interview with, and something happens. And you have to figure out, what's the way to talk about this that doesn't make you look like a jerk, that makes you effective and useful in helping this person to open up their heart, rather than you just created another enemy.
Right.
So the example I give in the book is, there was an office suite that I was working in with a bunch of psychologists. And I had a client in her 20s, and she walked into the office and she was sitting in the waiting room. And this guy who sort of was like the king of the suite, he was the one who'd hired lots of different interns, and he put all the offices together. He built the suite out, and he was like the kind of guy who loves to take a piece of the action from everybody. He's a kingdom builder.
Sure.
And he's also a narcissist. And he he comes out and he stares at my client. He's about to, you know, he's coming out there to get his client, and I'm talking to my client. She's about to come into my office, and he stares at my client, not for the 1 second that's questionable, not for the 3 seconds that's starting to get a little icky, but he's at the 9 or 10 seconds that's really into the creep zone, okay? And so she was really shook up, and she came into my office, and we talked about it. And, you know, I asked her we were brainstorming together. What should we do here? What's the way to deal with this on a professional level, on a personal level, on a spiritual level? How do we deal with this guy who did something really creepy?
Right.
And she said she didn't want to go to all the formal procedures of trying to, you know, make it a take away his license and cut off his head. She wanted to, she wanted me to talk to him about making this suite safer for people like her. And I said, that seems really appropriate. So I did meet with him one-on-one, and I talked to him, and I saw that I wasn't making any difference. He was just defensive, and he says, it happens all the time, and I can't help being a guy, and I can't. And he did the whole list of evasions. And I thought, I'm not being effective here.
Yeah.
So finally, I realized I had to find a way to talk to him in a way that he, as a narcissist and a person who doesn't want to control his roving eyes, was going to have to at least make some progress.
Right.
So that I at least, it was a safer suite for the people who are coming in. So I talked to him about the fact that, you know, the reason we all went into this helping profession and the reason why he's so good at what he does is because of X, Y, and Z. And in this situation, can you see that we, you know, we all slip sometimes. We all have moments where we, you know, something, some animal instinct or whatever inside of us causes us to do stuff that we need to work on. I said, is there ever a moment in your life when you've had to work on this thing? He said, I have had to work on it. I said, well, can I be of service in any way to help you work on this thing?
Yes.
So now I was an ally to him on something that he needs to work on because his daughter, his wife, and a whole lot of ex-girlfriends have told him he's a creep. I had a motivated person.
Yes.
And so we had several more conversations about this. I wouldn't say that I would still let him babysit for any member of my family. but I really thought, you know, this guy made a lot of progress. He worked hard on this. We were able to have a collegial relationship, and I checked back several times with the client and see, you know, how does she feel about how it's gone so far? It became a human progress thing rather than a all or nothing, cut this person out, you know, banish them from the kingdom, which sometimes is appropriate. I think, you know, Harvey Weinstein or other people need to go to jail. They're rapists. But this wasn't rape. This was a real awkward, creepy, bad thing which causes discomfort and needs to be fixed and addressed. It's not something that you can win in a courtroom.
Yes. And the way you approached it, because, well, you're a psychologist and you know the psyche of a narcissist as well. So you know that there are certain approaches that sometimes can be effective because they're very sensitive to being offended. And we know the backstory of that. But I love in your book, you quote, Rabbi Isaac 2000 years ago suggested, quote, sexual thoughts are so hard to stop that even during the time when a man is in mourning, his impulse is apt to give him trouble. I just love that.
And I like when people admit that these are really challenging things. Don't just hate the person who slipped, but realize we all slip sometimes and we have to work on that stuff. It's not we slip and therefore we're excused. It's we slip and therefore we have to keep working harder and getting more feedback from more people on how to stop slipping.
Yes, exactly. No, that's beautiful. But, you know, I love these stories you have in your book, and I love some of the quotes from the Jewish wisdom and the rabbis, the ancients who are so wise and know what they're talking about. You also have a wonderful chapter devoted to helping other people understand the LGBT movement. And, you know, we have a lot of unresolved issues with families and friends and communities who just, to me, they just don't get it, you know, and I have a lot of clients who are gay and in that community and, you know, they have a lot of pain from being judged and they have, you know, so-called been in the closet too long of a time because of the family judgment and the religious beliefs or whatever, you know, kind of scorn they're going to get for coming out. So can you share the story about what you told your dear dad? I love that story in your book when he was talking about the gay family member. That was a family member or someone he knew who was gay.
It was a gay family member.
Addressed him.
So my dad used the word faggot for describing my stepbrother.
Oh.
And, you know, I learned when I was 14 not to confront someone in public and not to humiliate them and embarrass them because that's wrong.
Sure.
So I asked my dad, I said, can we have a little conversation in the kitchen? He goes, what now?
You know?
He goes, here comes my son, the psychologist, is giving me a hard time about something else. I said, no, really. I think this is going to go well. Can we just try it?
Yeah.
So I wanted to lower his fear level, lower his defensive level. So we went into the kitchen. I said, Dad, I just want to talk to you about that word. Because I don't know if you're aware of what that word means. He goes, well, of course I know what it means. Uh-oh. I said, well, I'll give you my definition, then I want to hear your definition. I said, the word faggot If you look it up in the dictionary, it means a burning stick of wood. And that's why British people call a cigarette a fag. And I said, and it refers to the Middle Ages, when the Christian leaders of small towns, especially in Germany, would take gay people into the city square, put them up on a stake and burn them. Okay?
Yes.
So I don't think you know that. Most people growing up in Germany, is there any chance that you'd be willing to like not use that word? Because it's a really like oppressive word, yeah. You know? So he said, yeah, you said, you know, you're always giving me a hard time about stuff and you're a pain in the butt, but yeah, I won't use that word. Okay. And the truth is my dad has a good heart and has been able to expand and open up on many, many issues, but I don't think he was aware, as most people aren't aware of how hurtful they're being when they say things. And I just want to point out in the chapter, in We See It So Differently on LGBT issues, I talk about the fact that there's lots of variations in most religions about people who are really uncomfortable with LGBT issues, people who are moderately uncomfortable, people who are comfortable, but they still do some clumsy things, and people who have really come a long way to really honoring the humanity and the decency of the people that they formerly were saying bad things about. And that wrestling process, which in Judaism is normal, in some Christian denominations, it's also normal as well. Most Episcopalians wrestle with this issue all the time. Some Methodists wrestle with this issue. There are some denominations that are making lots of progress. Even in the Catholic Church, there's lots of wrestling with what do we really believe that the Bible says? Right. And so I actually go to biblical interpretations. I'm only a psychologist. I'm not a biblical scholar. But if you look at the places in Leviticus 19 where everybody freaks out about LGBT issues, what they're really talking about, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many other scholars, is you don't want people to be part of some bizarre cult worshiping thing where they're all getting drunk and they're all worshiping these idols and they're all getting like wild and crazy while worshiping these idols. That was the thing that many, many scholars think they were talking about when they said, don't do that thing.
Sure.
They were talking about idol worship and big orgiastic cults.
Right.
And that most religious denominations that have at least a liberal or a moderate branch to them have come around to the belief that they don't believe that the Creator or Jesus wanted this kind of cruelty toward people who are our family members and who are people who want to love. And some people would find that what I just said to be a very offensive thing. And I apologize if I've said anything that you or your minister or your particular writings don't like. Continue to honor what you have. But usually, if you dig deeply within your denomination, if you wrestle with the interpretations of different biblical passages, you'll find that they often come down to treat each person with dignity and kindness and love. And to know that on some level, we don't know exactly what's being said in that particular line in the Bible, because there's so many different interpretations for it.
Right. Really beautifully said. And I know it's just really helping a lot of people too who are in that community to not take a lot of negative messages in. You know, it's very difficult because a lot of people really, they have to deal with it on a daily basis with family, especially with holidays coming up. So, you know, it's really important to send out that message as well, as to just allow others to have their truth and not take it in. And I know it's very difficult. So I really agree with it. By the way, in case you just tuned in, you're on the couch, as you always are every Tuesday here at noon. I'm Dr. Michelle Cohen. My special guest today is Dr. Leonard Felder. He's the author of one of 13 books. This is his latest. We See It So Differently, it's called. Did I get that correct, 13 books? I saw the little eyebrow do that.
I love to write and I get passionate about certain subjects. And then another, you know, it's like getting pregnant again. I mean, it's like it needs to come out. So I didn't think I was going to write this book. I just certainly didn't want to get in the middle of these stormy conversations and everybody screaming at each other. But I really felt that people need right now to learn how to talk to each other, because otherwise we're just going to have all sorts of families where there's civil wars and people who can't come to dinner.
Yes, it is. It's beautiful. And, you know, the emphasis here on this book is for everyone, actually, but the title here, Creative Ways for Jews to Make Peace When Family Members or Colleagues Disagree About Religion, Politics, or Other Issues. And I say that because there is a wonderful chapter here on some of the heavy disagreements and discussions that we have about Israel. We have family members who are from Israel, who lived in Israel, and they come and they say, we know what it's like now, and we understand, and we all kind of clam up and be quiet because, yeah, they know what's going on and everything. But so how can we communicate better on that discussion with our friends and family members?
Well, one thing is, you know, a spiritual place you can start from is the place of not knowing. Not knowing is a really holy place to be because we don't know the whole picture.
Yes.
You know, one of the Jewish interpretations of God, and many religions also have this as well, is we don't know exactly what God is. And anybody who claims to have a picture of the box they're going to put God in and say, God is this, run fast from that person because that person's selling something. In Judaism, you know, there's this basic teaching, you know, that each person has a different understanding of this mystery that's beyond human comprehension. Mm-hmm. And to love that and to respect that and to know that we don't know. And same thing is true about Israel. So I know growing up in Detroit, in a fairly safe, you know, country, I don't have the same experiences that people who are growing up in Israel or in Palestine have to experience. So when I say build bridges and make peace and let's have, you know, let's serve hummus to everybody and have a kumbaya, their experience is very different. They will have a story about some relative of theirs who was blown up by a bomb or somebody who had their farm or their home taken away. And I have to hear those experiences because they're beyond what I know growing up in Detroit. So not knowing is the first place to start where you're trying to hear the experience or the pain of the person you're talking with. And then the second one is to figure out if we do have these competing narratives and these competing experiences, and if we all are victims of the same British treaties from the 1917s where Britain said to the Palestinians, this is your land and I'm going to give it to you forever. And they said to the Jews, this is your land and we're going to give it to you forever. And they both got them to sign treaties to do that. That messed with people's heads. Okay, so empire in the British Empire where two different peoples were promised the same land. How do we sort this out? So
yeah.
I often say, can people talk about this stuff and disagree about this stuff lovingly? And one of the stories I tell in the book is at our temple, we had a thing one time where they did the story of Abraham and Sarah. It was Sarah and it was Ishmael's mother, and I'm blanking on her name. But anyway, Ishmael's mother and Sarah were really close friends. And
right.
They worked together. And then they had this big falling out. And then there was so the Jewish people come from Sarah's line and the Arab people come from Ishmael's line. And we're cousins. We are cousins where there was this painful split between these two women. Okay. And so these two women in our congregation were both really scholars. They were both rabbis, as a matter of fact. They got up the week that was the portion of the week. And they did these two women talking to each other and having a dialogue. And they totally disagreed about everything. And one of them was a hawk from Israel in her real life. The other was a dove from Israel in her real life. And they disagreed about everything. And they also love each other. And they love each other. And they've worked together on many, many, many things. And we got to see modeled for us that the Jewish point of view and the Palestinian point of view can be talked about in a loving way where we're cousins. And two sides of the Jewish community, the one that's the hawk on Israel and the one that's the dove on Israel, can also talk to each other and disagree and have different points of view and do it because they love each other and they want to come up with a solution where both sides will at least be somewhat happy with the solution. That really helped me see that there is hope. When people don't just yell at each other and name call each other, but when they actually wrestle with these issues without interrupting each other, it can really build our understanding of the possibilities that might happen that will eventually bring a sense of teamwork and peace to the different competing factions of the Middle East. So I'm still a hopeful person, even though I get my heart broken at least 20 times a year on this subject. And I've participated in some workshops and conversations where people actually let each other speak without going off on each other. And I've seen lots where they did go off on each other.
Well, that's right. Exactly. And that's exactly what happens, you know, and it's very difficult because we're all passionate. You know, we all see it so differently, as your book says. And it's funny, I was remembering the discussions, and I talked to you about our other family members, you know, from Israel and stuff. And my husband, of course, was born here, but he talks about he was in the Maccabiah Games. He was an Olympian back in the day. And he has the stories about running, the hockey stories about running and training and missing landmines when he was training in Israel. And so, I mean, those are really powerful images and fearful things that he experienced. So I think, you know, it's respecting others' experiences and also, you know, understanding where they're coming from, their backstory and their truth of what they experienced. So, and like you said, it's all about lessons and learning from others. And when we have adversity, that's when we have the most opportunity to really understand and learn from others, right?
Right. It's really true. You know, and when people can connect around their shared pain. My wife's been in a Jewish Muslim cousins group for 20 years. And they're constantly reaching out to each other. You know, every time one of her Muslim friends gets picked on in a parking lot or shouted at when she's driving down the freeway, we agree about certain political issues. There's so much that we agree about. And there's so many spiritual and religious values where we have things in common.
Yes.
And it's a scary time. It's a scary time where people are being targeted because they look or they, you know, believe differently. And I'm hoping we're going to switch back to being a country that welcomes in the stranger and that remembers that we were all strangers at one time, because that comes right out of the Bible.
Boy, is that beautiful. I love that. And also, you know, we didn't bring this up, but this is also applying to, and I know your book was published in November, wasn't it?
Yes.
But I really missed the boat on that, and I so apologize. I wanted to have you on the show earlier, but things happen. And that's, you're here now, and that's all that matters. So another issue that I just wanted to bring up on that note is, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement was happening after your book was written. So a lot of these concepts that you're discussing also apply to understanding the passion behind that movement. Can you give a few words of wisdom on that for us?
Well, it's interesting. I worked for many years for the National Council of Christians and Jews. We had a camp in Ukiah, where we had teenagers from all over the LA, and it was called Brotherhood Sister USA. And we would deal with racism and sexism and homophobia and religious prejudice. And all these teenagers were really honest. And we had kids from, you know, from Santa Monica's, you know, Crossroads School, and with gang members from Pacoima and from East LA. And what I found was that we had to have dialogues with each other between the ones who said, being nice and being gentle and being patient doesn't work. There are lots of different individuals who found that didn't work for them.
Yeah.
And they had something to tell to the people who were much more patient and kind and understanding.
Yes.
Their kindness came from a sense of urgency. Yes, they were still kind, but there was an urgency.
Yes.
So what's interesting about the debate now within our society about Black Lives Matter and people who want to go slower is that we need that conversation.
Yes.
Because those who want to go slower sometimes go too slow and make too many compromises.
Yes.
And those who have the urgency and want things to go fast, sometimes stuff comes out of their mouth that alienates lots of people. And so we have to figure out, how do we make sure we keep having conversations so that the urgency folks and the take it slow folks can actually build solutions together and come up with solutions that really are going to come forward. And shutting either side up or ignoring or demonizing either side is not going to work. The urgency that comes from Black Lives Matter really woke a lot of people up. And a lot of people, especially younger generations, are more energized because of Black Lives Matter. Even if there's certain parts of Black Lives Matter they disagree with, Black Lives Matter has served the society in such a way to make sure that this is on the agenda and this is waking people up. And then the question will be, will they have to again be disappointed that the go slow people slow it down to such an extent that you don't see enough progress?
Right.
Or will the urgency of May 2020 cause more things to happen that are positive for everyone?
Yes, beautifully said, beautifully said. So are there some just kind of last minute to review, to review some last minute points that you might bring up on how we can keep the peace? I've been having this trouble all morning.
Okay.
Excuse me.
So I was just going to say,
yeah.
You know, most people say that they're not political, they're not religious, like you still got people who get on your nerves. So if you've got a family or colleagues or people who get on your nerves and they get on your nerves about some subject that you'd rather just not deal with it,
right?
You know, can you get some tools? Can you get some tools to make sure that you're able to honor the soul and the dignity and the pain of this person who gets on your nerves so that the two of you can continue to work together in the ways you need to work together? You know, I have a brother-in-law in Michigan who is complete opposite from me on politics. But we have to work together in taking care of our elderly relatives. We have to work together in taking care of our kids and our nieces and nephews. And we have to work together in being kind to our family members. So we've established over the years that there's certain subjects we have to tread very softly on. There's certain subjects we can't even talk about at all. Right. And then there are lots of places where we have things in common we need to work together on. So
right.
I can't just dismiss him. I can't just rule right. him out of my life, even though he says right. stuff that makes me cringe. Okay. But
right.
I do love that this person is making an effort in several areas to become a better person and open up his heart a little bit.
Yes.
His heart is very closed in so many areas that really matter a lot to me. I can't change all of that. I can just change the parts I can change.
No, that's beautifully said. And I think from my point of view as well, as a psychologist, I know that a lot of, you know, these hearts that are closed, you know, many times it comes from just fear, you know, of unknowing the truth of others and allowing that into your heart. You know, that's the important thing is just open up a little bit and don't be fearful. And, you know, we all have fears and, you know, a lot of it has to do with control, having our control of our beliefs taken away, which we embrace as our identity many times.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, this is such a book and I thank you so much, you know, for coming on the show today. It's just almost that time we have to wrap up. It always goes so fast with you when I interview you, Dr. Felder. It's so cool. The book is, We See It So Differently, Spiritual Ways to Make Peace When Family Members or Colleagues Disagree About Religion, Politics, and Other Issues. And of course, you can check out his many other books that he's written. You can get all of his books on Amazon, Dr. Leonard Felder, Leonard Felder, PhD. And what is the best way they can find out more about you on your website and get your books?
You know, on all the Amazon books, there's like a little bio, but
yeah.
I'm not the issue. The issue is whether people are going to have some tools to go into the Thanksgiving dinner or the Christmas or the Hanukkah or the Easter and be able to like not go crazy when someone is doing something that you go, oh, here we go again. I'm not going to be there with you to hold your hand, but maybe you right. will have some Jiminy Cricket moments where you hear me say, you got to breathe this moment and hear some options on how to speak in a way that still respects that person's dignity.
Right. Beautifully said. And pick up the book, folks, because I mean, it's really, it is inspiring along with his other books that you get to check out. On Amazon and also, you know, just Google him. He's all over the place, Dr. Leonard Felder or Leonard Felder, PhD. Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show again.
Thank you and good luck to you and your family.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Felder. Blessings to you. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, everybody. Please have a wonderful day and week. And we'll be back next week with another terrific guest. As I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works in the world. Thanks for joining me on the couch. Have a blessed week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.